Welcome into another edition of the Naked Bootleg podcast, our Texans preview edition of the show. And we are hoping that we're going to be joined by a guest a little bit later, but me and Adam are going to kick off the show for now. And Adam, we're going to get right into it, start talking about old friend Bill O'Brien here, who has had a little bit of a rough start to this season for the Texans so far.
It seems like they've started to usher in the Deshaun Watson era at quarterback. And, you know, judging from their game against Cincinnati, it's off to a bit of a sort of a rough start. But he did well enough to win that game. The problem is, you know, you're not sure if he's, you know, the – you're not sure if this offense is where it's gonna need to be against good teams, and you know, the Texans really haven't developed a quarterback lately under O'Brien, and nothing's really gone well in that respect. So at this point, you know, they're still searching on offense. You don't know what they do well. You don't know what their exact identity is. And so they've got a ways to go on offense, and it still feels like that.
Yeah, the big thing here for me is the question I'm starting to ask myself is how good of a coach is Bill O'Brien really? And you don't want to get a guy fired or anything like that, but I think that his approach on offense right now, where that's supposed to be his side of the ball, is very stubborn. And we talked about this a little bit last week when we were talking about some of the coaching struggles. And then, of course, last night, Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan put together a masterpiece on offense. And, you know, maybe we have some young coaches that at least, you know, are creative and willing to make changes. But with O'Brien, it seems like, and when you watch that Texans game last week against Cincinnati, which unfortunately I had to watch again, painfully, and it was, shotgun timing routes for Watson, relying on accuracy and reading the field and stuff like that for a guy making his first NFL start. And you just ask yourself, you know, is that because it was on a Thursday night and it was a short week, or is that just Bill O'Brien's stubbornness that he's not going to change his offense, you know, the offense that is mainly very similar to what the Patriots run, obviously, from his days with the Pats. So, you know, putting a guy like Watson, who is extremely limited right now, I mean, I can rattle off 10 different stats that tell you how poorly Deshaun Watson has played in the game and a half that he played in the first game of the season for the Texans. It's been ugly. I mean, he's the second worst rated quarterback by Pro Football Focus. Scott Tolzien is the only one that has a lower rating. He is the lowest yards per attempt in the league right now. His passer rating under pressure is 26.0. You know, just not playing well at all. Accuracy is terrible. So my question to you is this, Adam. Don't you think that if you were Bill O'Brien, you would go into this game and try to hit the Patriots with something completely different with Watson and run a more run style option, read option offense with maybe some veer actions and stuff like that? And don't say it doesn't work, because Kansas City just came in here and put a whooping on the Patriots, you know, running a similar offense to that.
Yeah. I mean, I would do my best to tailor the offense around Watson. I would see what I can do to incorporate his legs as much as possible, because he's good at that. You know, I feel like when the pocket breaks down and he can sort of evade the rush a little bit and find an open receiver, that's his strength. You know, that touchdown run against Cincinnati was pretty incredible. And moving some designed runs, some zone reads and stuff like that. I think those are capable plays for him. But you know, asking him to do everything that you know, like a Patriots offense does at this stage in his career is very it's very tough. It seems like, you know, almost too much.
It's bad coaching.
It's
bad coaching to, I mean, in that last game, he basically had Deshaun Watson playing like he was Tom Brady. And that's not an exaggeration. Like, he was literally standing in shotgun 90% of the time, you know, holding the ball, scanning the field, looking for open receivers, which there weren't many because they don't have very many good receivers. And now they have this young quarterback who is not throwing accurately, is not seeing his reads well. If you ask me, if they come into this game against the Patriots with the same game plan on offense as they did with the Bengals, Watson could have 3 or 4 turnovers easily in this game. And it's just asking to lose by 40, really. And, you know, the only way that I can see that they survive even this game or going forward is if they completely throw something different at defenses that they've thrown at in the first couple of years of the Bill O'Brien era and ran a more, you know, running style offense that's predicated on using his feet and his legs as you know, a strength in the offense. And, you know, even on the touchdown run, which was obviously a great individual effort by him, you know, he had open receivers downfield that he basically just passed on completely to run the football, which is not ever something that you really want to see, even from a mobile guy. You know, he has a receiver wide open 25 yards downfield down the sideline, doesn't even see him, you know, and instead he tucks it. And obviously it ends up working out for him because he's an athletic dude and he runs for, you know, 60-yard touchdown. So everybody says, oh, that's a great highlight, you know. And I just feel like this offense is not going to get any better. DeAndre Hopkins is the only receiver that they have. Watson his legs are really the only thing that is going well for him right now. So I think it's kind of a disaster offensively. The offensive line obviously is a disaster. And that's really the big question to me, is that can they turn into this kind of power running team, you know, with RPOs and stuff like that built in to help Watson with this offensive line playing the way that it's playing right now?
Yeah, no, it would be ideal if they tried to do something like that. It would make sense. You know, it's sort of a common sense thing to do, is to simplify things for the QB and to, you know, mold the offense around what he can do best. You know, they need to do as much of that as possible. It's a developmental thing. It's also just, you know, it's a way of, you know, trying to win now. So I'm not sure, you know, what their plan is. I don't know if they're going to be stubborn and, you know, stick with what they've been doing. That's what it seems like, though. So,
not good. If they're stubborn like this, I mean, man, he's going to throw 3 picks easily in this game. If, because he almost threw a couple against Cincinnati, should have thrown a couple against Cincinnati, that a few were dropped by Bengals defensive backs, and he should have thrown more. I mean, when you watch that Cincinnati game, when you watch the All 22, I mean, he maybe makes 2 or 3 good throws the entire game. You know, and I'm talking about, you know, on time, downfield throws, accurately. And the only one I can think of that was really obvious was one to Hopkins over the middle that he split 2 linebackers and threaded it in there, a nice pass. But other than that, I mean, it was a disaster. It was balls in the dirt. It was balls over people's heads. It was not coming out on time. It was not reading the field properly, throwing near interceptions, stuff like that. You know, you don't want to pick on the guy too much, but, you know, he is just a rookie, but he has a long way to go in this offense, I think, to be Tom Brady, obviously, or even anything less than that to run this type of offense. You know, some guys have had success running Bill O'Brien's offense in the past that aren't, you know, Tom Brady or someone like that. And so it is possible, obviously, but it is interesting just from a big picture standpoint that they drafted Watson, who is not a, you know, very good timing and accuracy quarterback and doesn't really do the stuff that they really want to do well. I mean, he is not that type of quarterback. So it's interesting that they picked Watson over some of the other guys that were in this draft that might have been a little bit more fit the system a little bit more.
Right. Yeah, and I'm curious because I also I really like Deontay Foreman.
Yeah, I want to ask you about him as well.
Yeah, I think he's an excellent back with great potential, and he's a big guy who's really fast. And you know, you watch him in the preseason when he got a bunch more snaps, and it was sort of, you know, you could see it. You could see this kid is you know, somebody who can really make a difference in this league. So, you know, I think throwing him out there, I just think he's already a little bit more advanced than some of the guys that they have on that team.
He's the best back in their roster. He should be RB1.
Yeah, I really believe that. So, so I'd be curious to see how much he plays over, you know, like a Lamar Miller. And you know, I think, I'm not sure what's holding him back. Maybe his pass protection isn't where they want him to be. But, you know, I think he's somebody that could help take the pressure off Watson. And if you were in an offense where you're in the shotgun and doing run-pass options and stuff like that, that kind of fits in with what Foreman was doing in Texas too. So it would make a lot of sense. So
yeah, Foreman's a good player. He led the FBS in rushing yards his last year there, last year before he was drafted. And Lamar Miller, my guess is a little bit more experienced, and also he's a little bit better catching passes out of the backfield. So maybe that is something that they like more about Miller. But just pure running style and running ability, Foreman is already the best running back on their roster and really should be getting the lion's share of the carries. I would think that that's going to come sooner rather than later, and especially against a team like the Pats, who might go a little bit light in some of their looks up front with the extra safeties and stuff like that. He's a bruiser, you know, he's like a Marshawn Lynch type almost. So to put him in the game, I think would be really good for that as well. I think he'd be able to run over some guys that some of the smaller guys that the Patriots have trying to make tackles like he did in the preseason game. I know it's preseason, but he still did it, you know, pretty effectively against the Patriots in that game. So that I would definitely look to see Foreman down the road very soon here become the top running back. From a Patriots perspective, quickly, what do you think defensively that you're mainly looking for in this game?
I want to see the linebackers continue their progression. I thought that they played much better against the Saints than they did against the Chiefs. Now, that was a low bar to hit. But I thought they did. You know, I thought their lineup was a lot more. It made a lot more sense to have, you know, a Landon Roberts in the middle and have him make some plays. It was interesting to see Patrick Chung covering the running backs a little bit more. I thought the overall game plan was better. I feel like the Patriots' pass rush was pretty decent too with Wise. I think keep an eye on him again, and overall you don't have to reinvent the wheel when you're going up against this Texans offense. So I'm not looking for anything schematically that's too complex, but. Yeah, and also fundamentally, you know, good tackling, stuff like that. I felt like across the board the defense played better. And so, but mainly I am interested in the linebackers and how they play and where they line up.
Yeah, agreed. I thought that moving Van Noy more to his traditional weak side spot and having relying on Roberts in the middle a little bit more was a pretty good move last week that worked out well, especially against the run. Roberts had a pretty good game. and stopping the run. I think he had 3 run stops in that game and had one really good play where he fired through, read the run direction and fired right through and made the tackle. So yeah, that was good to see. And yeah, the linebackers, I think, are obviously everyone's big question mark still. And then the other one, I would like to see a good game out of Malcolm Butler. You know, he's saying all the right things in the locker room, you know, say blaming himself for his poor play and all that stuff, which is great, you know, to hear. But now it's, you know, time to put it on the field for Malcolm Butler, who we talked about on Wednesday and still obviously agree that is, you know, still a good player in there and everything, is just kind of going through some stuff right now, probably.
Yeah.
Mentally, but I think I would expect to see a big game from him, and let's see a big game from him and Stephon Gilmore, and DeAndre Hopkins is really the only receiving threat that the Texans have completely across the board, really. So those two guys have a chance to really go up against Hopkins in this game, I would think, and shut him down and have him hold him to a low yardage total, and I'd like to see that happen just from you know, a perspective that, you know, those two guys might not have played up to snuff quite yet.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought, yeah, but the Malcolm Butler stuff is really important. You know, and he did talk to the media this week, and like you said a lot of the right things, and I feel like he's somebody that is so important because, you know, going down the road, you're going to need him to be his best self. And when he's his best self, he's, in my opinion, I think yours too, he's easily the best corner on the team. You know, I think he's better than Gilmore, you know, going from what I've seen so far this year and before. He really battles for the ball well, and he just has that aggressiveness that you look for in any defensive player. So if he can get back to that, I think that, you know, you really are going to see this defense take another step forward. So it's something to establish, because I'll look at this game and say, okay, well, given who they're going against, you know, even with Hopkins, he doesn't have a great quarterback to get him the ball. So, you know,
that poor guy.
Yeah, I know. So this isn't like the best test for these corners, but even if they get going a little bit, it's sort of a foundational thing going forward when they do face better quarterbacks and receivers, which will come soon enough. So, you know, I think it's an important game for Butler. It's an important game for Gilmore. It's an important game for the whole defense. But, you know, I think it's something that Butler has to, you know, put some of these past performances behind him.
Yeah, agreed. I think that we, against the Saints, we kind of got what we wanted from the defense and you know, put some water on those fires that came out of Kansas City. You know, where the defense is terrible, the sky is falling, all that type of stuff. It looked a lot better last week, obviously. The secondary played a whole lot better than it did the week before. But now you welcome a Texans team in that is garbage on offense, and you really should dominate them from a defensive standpoint. You know, the Texans should not score more than 10 or 13 points in this game. And, you know, that's what you want to see. You want to see, can this defense really lock down on a bad unit? You know, we know that maybe when they go up against an Atlanta Falcons team or something like that, then it might be uglier. But can these teams that don't have that kind of talent on offense, you know, that's what we're really looking for, is that can the defense win those types of games and really dominate in those types of games? With DeAndre Hopkins, man, I really do wonder if eventually someone pries him out of Houston that has a quarterback that can throw him the ball.
Yeah.
You know, what good – and they just gave him a massive extension, so maybe not. But what good is it to have DeAndre Hopkins on the Texans over the last couple of years with the quarterback parade that they have ushered out there. Now, obviously, they think that Watson is the answer, probably, and he's going to be the guy that becomes, you know, DeAndre Hopkins' you know, number one QB that he's played with in his career. But, man, I mean, there's some really bad quarterbacks, and now you have a bad team that just has this overpriced wide receiver that is not going to put up really big numbers because of who he's playing with.
Yeah, it's bad. I do think Watson eventually will be a lot better than he is now. I believe in his potential, but, I mean, you just got to feel for Hopkins because he's so good. And he doesn't really have anybody who can consistently get him the ball on time. And you're right, a parade is a good way of putting it with their quarterbacks. It's just
great.
One for another, you know, a guy who can't.
More than the Browns since Bill O'Brien got there. Like, think about that. I mean, that's crazy that any team has a worse quarterback situation than what the Browns have had over the last 20 years or so. And the Texans in the last 3 or 4 years or whatever it's been under O'Brien, I think it's three, is right up there with that in terms of, you know, the different guys that they've had under center. And watching that game last week, Bengals-Texans, to see A.J. Green playing with Andy Dalton and Hopkins playing with Watson was just disappointing on all sorts of fronts from that perspective. And, man, you know, both those guys are super talented and just are getting screwed from their quarterback play. We are joined now by our guest for the week, Henry McKenna of Patriots Wire in USA Today. Henry, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we were talking a little bit about Deshaun Watson and this Texans offense before you jumped on with us, and we just wanted to ask your opinion on the rookie and what you've seen so far out of this pretty dreadful Texans, though.
I have been thinking about how the Patriots might play him, and my thought is that they might treat him like they treat Tyrod Taylor. They have a habit of cage rushing a lot of these mobile quarterbacks, guys who are better at playmaking when they're running than they are when they're throwing. So Tyrod Taylor, when the Pats play him, they don't necessarily let their pass rushers pin their ears back and go straight for the quarterback. A lot of the times they'll increase the amount of discipline and edge discipline so that the quarterback can't get outside, and then the defensive tackles are making sure the quarterback can't scramble up through the middle. And the result is often that there aren't a lot of sacks or pressures, and Deshaun Watson might have a lot of time to throw, but the positive is that that's exactly what they want him to do, is throw, which he's shown to be not very good at so far in his young NFL career. So I don't think he's a very intimidating passer. Seems like he's pretty poised, not prone to turnovers, which, again, kind of likens him to Tyrod Taylor. But I think the Patriots can handle him much like they handle a lot of rookie quarterbacks.
Yeah, 0-8 rookie quarterbacks at Gillette Stadium. Wrote about that this week. But a 64.3 passer rating in 21 games or so against rookies in the Belichick era. So they get beat up pretty good. But moving over to the defensive side of the ball, me and Adam are in agreement here that the Texans' defense isn't really the same unit quite as good as it was last year. What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, yep, I think that's fair, especially with A.J. Bouye leaving. But ultimately, I think the front seven that they have there is just as good. Better probably than what the Pats saw because J.J. Watt's back. And so I think that should be an intimidating prospect of blocking those guys. The Pats, we've seen, have struggled blocking the interior in the Super Bowl, in the divisional round. So we know that group of guys, I mean, there are five of them now who are excellent at rushing on the outside, on the inside, among those Texans defensive players. And I think they all have the ability to disrupt Brady, which is a little bit unnerving for the Patriots offensive linemen, who I don't think have looked as good as they did look last year. Nate Solder in particular has been getting kind of terrorized, or maybe that's an overstatement, but he's been getting picked on by some of the defensive ends. And I could see the Texans doing something similar, especially if Marcus Cannon is unable to play. And he didn't practice yesterday. He was present at practice. So if his treatment is anything like Gronk's, he will probably practice today, but we can't say that for certain, today being Friday, the final day of practice. So I don't know, you know, no Marcus Cannon, less than stellar Nate Solder, and then an interior, which has never been all that great at pass protection. There's definitely a reason for concern when thinking, you know, and just looking at, like, when zooming in on that micro picture of, you know, Pat's offensive line versus Texans defensive line. But we know that that micro picture, as I'm calling it, or whatever you want to call it, that little front seven matchup, that O-line, D-line matchup can swing games in a big way, especially when Tom Brady is the star, especially when it's someone's game plan to disrupt Tom Brady. So,
yeah, I think your point about Cannon is a big one. I mean, there's a pretty big drop off when you're talking about Solder and Cannon, and then dropping down to Fleming. You know, that's you know, I mean, nothing against Cam Fleming, he's just not as good as those other two guys. And so if you have him going against a Watt or a Merciless or guys like that, then it's you're asking for trouble. So and you know, even though Brian Cushing, you know, at linebacker isn't there, I feel like the Texans have some guys there that are still okay. So, and this would sort of, you know, heighten the need for, you know, the ground game to sort of take the pressure off and, you know, more of those shorter passes to the running backs too, I think would be a good way, because I don't think you want Brady sitting back in the pocket too long waiting for guys to get all the way down the field on vertical routes when you've got the offensive line situation. If you know, especially if Cannon's out, the way it is, you'd rather get the ball out of his hands as quickly as possible.
Yeah, they have three guys really that can rush the passer, and that's why you know you need both tackles to really be on their game. With Watt, Merciless, and Clowney in the mix, you know, can put him on those three dudes and move them all around the defensive front and really create a lot of, you know, disruption. I just think that on the back end, without Bouye and Quinton Demps, who's underrated too, played safety for them last year, is not there anymore either. He's in Chicago. So they're starting some new guys in that secondary. And, you know, it hasn't been a total disaster, but they've also gone up against Blake Bortles and Andy Dalton in the first 2 weeks of the season. So, you know, different style quarterbacks, I would say, than Tom Brady. But, you know, overall, yeah, this Texans front is just as good as ever, and J.J. Watt's now back and playing like J.J. Watt. So it's definitely a scary matchup, especially I would agree with the interior of the Patriots offensive line. And that brings me to this. Do you guys think that there's a possibility that we could see a really conservative game plan? They kind of rolled out one of those in Denver last year, if you guys remember, where they ran the ball a bunch and really protected Brady from Von Miller and company. Do you think we could be headed for a similar, you know, run first style game plan here?
I think we could see Brady air it out again. I mean, the cornerbacks on the Texans are not healthy. Even if they play, they're not healthy. So you talked about missing Quinton Demps. You talked about missing AJ Bouye, but also Kevin Johnson, he got hurt last week. Jonathan Joseph, I think, was also hurt last week. So the Pats may have trouble with the Texans' defensive line, but as long as they can get the ball off past the defensive line, I think they should be able to move the ball really well against sort of a what's kind of starting to look like a porous Texans secondary, which is surprising to think that that's kind of the way they're trending, but it's only because of, you know, these key departures and these injuries that they obviously didn't expect to happen. But yeah, I mean, could they set it up with play action? You know, I think Mike Gillisley will probably get like 20 carries, maybe 15. James White will probably get another 8 receptions. I think Rex Burkhead probably will not play, which means those guys will get heavier loads. I don't think Deion Lewis will get a bigger load just with just because I think they're saving him for late season. But ultimately, I don't think they'll be afraid of this Texans defense just because of the talented defensive front. I think they, if they see a matchup in the passing game that they want to beat, that they can beat, they'll probably go out and do that.
Yeah, I think there's going to be balance. You know, I think they're going to use the running game to set the pass up a little bit. But like Henry said, there's so much problems with their back end that you can't not take advantage of that. So, I do feel like the Pats aren't going to alter things too much. You know, that Broncos defense that they faced last year, was a lot more, you know, intimidating than what you're going to see this weekend out of Houston. So, you know, could they do that? Sure. But I do feel like, you know, there are matchups to exploit on the outside. And I think the Pats will probably do that.
Yeah, there's one matchup that I wanted to bring up to you guys that was at the linebacker position with Bernardic McKinney, who is a big linebacker, is much better stopping the run than he is in pass coverage. And it seems like a guy that they could probably pick on with James White and some of the other underneath guys in the passing game there. And also, you know, Zach Cunningham has played well as a rookie, but it is still a rookie, and you know the Patriots will go after rookies like they did with Anzalone last week. So those are two guys and starting linebackers for the Texans that they could really put James White into situations where he could beat them or maybe some other guys as well.
I thought you know, McKinney was one of the reasons why they drafted a guy like Cunningham, is to see if they could get a guy who's better in pass coverage as a linebacker. And Cunningham's not that guy yet. I mean, I think you guys remember the preseason game where they really picked on him a lot. So, you know, I don't think the Texans really have guys yet who are capable of staying with James White for four quarters, or you know, any of their backs in pass coverage. I think that's really another matchup the Pats are going to look to go after.
Throughout the league, it seems like no one has answers to good pass catching running backs, which is why I think in part the Patriots load up on them. They have three right now. And honestly, Gillisley says he can catch the ball. So aside from White, Burkhead, Lewis, and maybe Gillisley, I think every team looks at that backfield and definitely in the passing game and says, holy cow, how do we stop this? Yeah. McKinney, like you said, not very good at covering. And Adam, like you said, Cunningham – could be that guy someday, but isn't. We saw in the preseason, you mentioned this as well, two touchdowns, same route. First quarter, I think it was Rex Burkhead.
Right.
Fourth quarter, I think it was DJ Foster. Same route, just coming out of the backfield, maybe motioned right of the formation, and then they ran like a simple slant route.
A little angle route.
Angle route where he got toasted. So, He's got improvements to make and hasn't made them yet. And I think the Patriots running backs should get a pretty big day. That's why I think White in particular, all those fantasy owners out there, if you got him in PPR, start him. I know I am. So
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the running back thing that you mentioned about receiving backs is really interesting because it's definitely true. The Patriots have obviously ran into issues in the past also, but I think the answer for the Pats perspective, at least for against other teams, is Patrick Chung. You know, the other teams I feel like are going to start doing that more and more with putting safeties in the box and having those guys, you know, cover some of these running backs. I mean, I know he's hurt right now, but if you're going up against Arizona when they're fully healthy and David Johnson's in the lineup, you're not putting, you know, Kyle Van Noy in man coverage against David Johnson, or you know, Le'Veon Bell or whoever it may be, Theo Riddick, you know, long list of names that you can go down the line. And before the season started, it was a kind of a macro issue that I was looking at across the league. And I really think that the answer is going to be that they're going to get more three safety looks around the league, and or maybe two safety looks with just cover one single high, and put these safeties that are better in man coverage against some of these running backs who are really starting to turn into receivers. I mean, Alvin Kamara made a catch down the sideline on Patrick Chung last week that is a wide receiver play. You know, he went up, made the catch over him and really pulled it in. And had strong hands on it. And that's a wide receiver play. That's not something that you normally see out of a running back, even a guy like James White or David Johnson or any of those dudes. So I definitely think that safeties are definitely going to play a major role in the NFL in the next, you know, wave of this type of offenses that we're seeing.
Yeah. And go back to Andrew's point earlier is, you know, looking at the Patriots offensive line against this Texans defensive line. I think that's the biggest challenge maybe in the entire game for the Patriots here. I think that's the one thing you can take away from this game and say, okay, you know, sort of as a litmus test sort of matchup, because this is one of those defensive lines that will have as much talent on it as the Patriots are going to face against some of these other teams on their schedule. So, you know, across the board, some of the defensive players aren't going to be up to that level. But I really think going forward, you look at what the Patriots can do against this front, and it'll be a really good test, and it's something that will be useful going forward.
Yeah, I think that I was expecting a little bit of a step forward for this offensive line positively this season. I really thought that Joe Tooney and Shaq Mason especially had the chance. You know, I think we kind of know the players that Solder, Andrews, and Cannon are at this stage of their careers. You know, solid, but nothing you know, particularly special about Andrews. And then Solder and Cannon, I think, are above average to good starting tackles in this league. But Shaq Mason and Joe Tooney were the two guys that really had a chance to, you know, develop into better players this season. And I think that matchups like this are where we're going to get to see whether or not that's going to happen. I know it's only week three, but, you know, both guys are really talented players, athletic players that can do different stuff as far as, you know, in the run game especially. With Shaq Mason. So I really was hoping that this was going to be kind of a leap forward for this offensive line this year.
Yeah, I don't think you've seen that yet.
So. No, you haven't. And this game, I think, is definitely going to be a litmus test, as you mentioned. And hopefully, you know, we'll start to see that more and more. Although I do think that Tooney and Mason have been solid. You know, those are two guys that I really thought Mason in particular could really take a leap this year.
I think they're also kind of banking on the Patriots are banking on their running, their offensive line improving because of the verticality of their pass catchers. I think the loss of Julian Edelman means that this year Brady's, you know, we always say that Brady's time in the pocket is 3 seconds or whatever it is per year. But I bet it's going to go up this year because the Patriots offensive linemen are going to be expected to protect for longer, and the short passing game is going to be less of a factor, and the vertical element of the game is going to be more of a factor with Gronk, who people forget is, you know, one of the best deep threats in the game. It's just that he doesn't burn you for, you know, 100-yard touchdowns like a Tyreek Hill. And then Cooks, Dorsett, and then Hogan. All those guys are vertical receivers. Amendola is going to come back this week, and that'll change that a little bit. Or maybe he will. I don't know. But he's practicing. So that shift in personnel, that shift potentially in scheme, is going to require more out of the offensive line, which means I think Bill Belichick wouldn't have done that. He wouldn't have made that shift if he didn't expect his offensive line could handle it. And so I expect them to make a step forward, especially with that interior group of younger players.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And they ask a lot out of those guys, not necessarily in pass protection as much, but especially in the run game. Shaq Mason is one of the most used, you know, offensive linemen in on pulls and crackback box and stuff like that in the entire NFL. You know, he's doing it all the time. They ask a lot out of those guys on the offensive line, you know, in the past game too. Stuff like screens and stuff like that are a huge part of the offense. So, you know, it's a lot to ask for young players, especially last year for Tooney as a rookie. But now, you know, that it's time to go. You know, those guys have got some experience. Tooney obviously has a whole year under his belt at this point. You know, played in some really big games, obviously, Super Bowl, all that type of stuff. So, you know, it's go time now for those offensive linemen, because I really think that this unit has a chance on paper, at least, to be, you know, pretty good to great if they can put it together. And with Skarnecchia, you know, back and at it, then, you know, all the more reason to think that. And as you mentioned, you know, the receivers that they have, absolutely, they're going to have to protect better. And Brady, you know, got the ball out a lot quicker against New Orleans than he did against Kansas City. Kansas City was one of his highest release in terms of seconds to release, about 2.9, almost 3 seconds per release, which was one of his highest in a long time. And it got back down to about 2.4, 2.5 seconds against New Orleans, so back more towards that normal. But last year, he was all the way at like 2.25, 2.3, right in that range. So it's still, even against New Orleans, was a little bit higher than what we're used to Brady seeing. And that's not just a Brady thing. Jimmy Garoppolo also had a very similar time to release in his, you know, game and a half that he played in last year. So it's more a Patriots scheme thing, really, that they had going until this season, where they have all the new vertical guys.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with that personnel, like you said. It's an adjustment period. I still think the offense, while it played well last week, is still in an adjustment period with their new personnel. And it's going to take a little bit of time before they find the rhythm and, you know, live up to sort of the potential that they can get to. I feel like, you know, I really like what a guy like Philip Dorsett brings to the table. I like what, you know, I liked what he did last week, but he's going to need to become more comfortable in the offense before they really use him as the type of weapon that he's capable of being. So, you know, you might not see this offense really become what it can be for another few weeks. So, you know, especially having all these guys healthy at the same time is a big factor in that. So, and we haven't really seen that yet. So.
Yeah, you really want to see – I want to see at least more out of this running game. They have a lot of stable running backs. Gillislee is a really good back. They have a decent offensive line. They have the tight ends. They have the James Devlin. They have a lot of guys that they can really attack in this run game. And right now it's, you know, under 4 yards a carry. And although they've had some nice runs here and there, it really hasn't been a consistent, you know, running game so far. And the Jaguars – really ran all over this Texans front last in week one, especially early on in that game. So I hope to see some of that a little bit in this game. Henry, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that they can establish Gillislee. I looked at his stats and he's averaging 3.8 yards per carry. I guess that shouldn't be surprising to me, but for a guy who is so efficient coming into the season,
it should be better.
He should be better. I think a part of it falls on him. I don't see him breaking a lot of tackles. I don't see him bursting through the line as much as a guy like Lewis and Burkhead and sometimes White have done. But I guess I would like to see more from him on a per snap basis, basically. Just fighting for a little bit extra yards. I think one thing that skews his his small sample size of carries, which I think is, you know, under, it's definitely under 40, is that a lot of the times he's in there for goal line and short yardage situations.
Yeah, I was
so
gonna say that.
He can only gain 1 yard, or is only his, if we're thinking in the do your job sense,
right?
He is only asked to get 1 yard or 1.5 or whatever it is. So I think that skews it a little bit, but I think he was touted to be an efficient runner in Buffalo, a guy who averaged a lot of yards per carry, and I want to see that guy when he's not running, you know, in short yarded situations. And I think a part of that has to do with the offensive line working to create bigger holes for him.
Yeah, you know, I think Gillislee is really I've liked what I've seen so far, but, you know, and we knew this when they signed him, but, you know, he's got no wiggle. You know, he's not going to be eluding very many guys. He might run through some guys. But I thought that there were some instances where he really just tried to hit a particular hole hard, and he didn't see some running lanes that he could have bounced into different directions and stuff like that to create bigger runs. So I wonder if a little bit of it is trying to just get a feel for where the holes are going to be in this offense. And right now it kind of looks like he's really focused on doing his job, as you said, and he's just running at the hole that the play is really designed to go at. And then going from there. But hopefully, eventually, you know, one thing that I thought was, I'm not the biggest LeGarrette Blount fan, but one thing I thought that was really underrated about him was his vision. He did a really nice job of finding different avenues out of the backfield. And I'd like to see Gillislee get into that rhythm as well, because I think that he is like one or two broken tackles every run away from an 80-yard touchdown. You know, he's got that kind of long distance speed, and if he can just get past that last level of the defense, and we've seen it a couple times already where he really gets brought down by the last guy that is in the way from it being a really big run, you know, then we can start to see some more of that yards per carry go up in some of those 20 plus yard runs that he had last year in Buffalo. But Buffalo has also, you know, run the ball very well over the last, you know, handful of years. So they're a really good running attack and really have that down. But I think that we all would like to see a little bit more out of Gillislee.
Yeah, I also think that Buffalo's offensive line is a really good run blocking incognito and guys like that. But yeah, I think Gillislee, like you guys said, you know, doesn't have sometimes the great opportunities because he's only asked to gain like a yard or two on the goal line. But, you know, it's funny. We talk about all these running backs and, you know, I still kind of feel like Deion Lewis is their best running back, you know? So, you know, it will, and like Henry said, maybe they're saving him for later in the year, but I'm sort of waiting for them to, you know, sort of unleash Lewis again on somebody and show what he can do again. But, you know, maybe that's not in the cards.
Yeah, Henry mentioned that he thought that they were saving him. That's got to be one of the more obvious, you know, question marks here is what is going on with his usage, Deion Lewis. That is because he, like Adam said, I agree, is still extremely talented.
For Deion Lewis?
Yeah.
I think I mentioned it. I think it's all about preservation. They know that Lewis is a guy who gets injured. They know that he's a guy who's an explosive playmaker. They know they have three explosive playmakers in the offense already, aside from Lewis, in the backfield, that is. So, in my opinion, and this kind of goes against what Belichick would typically say about players, you play the healthy ones, is what he'd say. I think they are saving Deion Lewis for the end of season when all of the defenses are dinged up and tired and it's cold out, and that's when Deion Lewis's explosiveness, his wiggle, his, you know, neon Deion element is most dangerous. And if they can have that fresh and ready at week 8, week 10, where they've given this guy like 10 to 20 snaps and 5 touches a game, or, you know, he does more than that because he's on special teams, but they have this rare luxury of depth, and I think it would be interesting and very unusual, honestly, to see a team preserve a player for the, you know, end of season run in a way that they actually have them active like they do. But because some teams will obviously put a guy on IR and get that same effect. But anyways, I think they see a guy in White who can do what Lewis does in the passing game. They see a guy in Burkhead and Gillisley who can do what they want in the running game. And Lewis is a guy that they can afford to keep on ice for a little while.
Yeah, and I think that's the key phrase is they can afford to. They have the depth in order to sort of take him along slowly and really unleash him when they want to. But I'm still sort of waiting for that game, and I think, I think when they do, he's still capable of having huge games, like he did against the Texans last year, and almost every game he was in the year before.
Yeah, it's amazing that a guy, I always go back to that Texans playoff game, that has that type of game, three touchdowns in three different ways, most dynamic player on the field by far, and he's barely getting touches now, and that's kind of where we're at with him based on just the depth that they have at that position. Speaks to that depth is just pretty crazy. But Henry, from a macro level here, what are you looking to take out of this Houston game? Obviously they're 13-point favorites. We probably assume that they're going to win, but what are you looking for big picture wise here?
I think first and foremost, I want to see what they do in the secondary. I don't know if you guys were talking about this early in the podcast, but Malcolm Butler wasn't a starter for the first time since his game-winning interception. And I think I have a few theories on why that was. Everybody has
us.
Give them to you.
Yeah.
Obviously there's the performance-based issue. I think that's the most likely one. Second, there's the let's lower his workload because we plan to trade him like Jamie Collins. Like, let's not get him injured. Let's kind of rest him so that when he's got more value, when we're starting to put him on the trade market. My conspiracy theory, and I wrote a story on this morning, is that they haven't done any of those things yet. Like, sure, he's playing poorly. That's a factor. Sure, they might trade him. But what they benched him for was to see if they could survive without him. I think they wanted to see against the New Orleans Saints passing attack that's one of the best in the league. And even though that Saints team really stinks, and I think they're going to be really bad this year, there's no arguing that that group of pass catchers, that passer, Drew Brees, that's one of the best in the league. And so, how did the secondary, how could they hold up without Butler, with Eric Rowe and Stephon Gilmore? What does that secondary look like? And if they got a picture that they liked where they said, okay, we're comfortable going without Malcolm Butler, then they would, in fact, start shopping him. So that's just the theory that I have, that they wanted to just experiment about what life would look like without Malcolm Butler. And if they got what they wanted, then they could move on sooner than the end of the season, when he actually has value, when they can actually trade him. Unfortunately, that experiment didn't really work because Rowe got injured, so they didn't get the full picture. But that's why I'm interested in week three, watching the secondary. How do they use Butler? How do they use Rowe? Is Rowe healthy? And I think that will be the main point of interest. The other thing, obviously, is does this offensive line look stout against what is an incredibly deep group of run defenders and pass rushers in the front seven? And then finally, I want to see Brandon Cooks play better. I want to see Stephon Gilmore play better. Both of those guys have been underwhelming. Cooks's production has been stymied in a way, or like it's been offset is probably the better word, by some penalties that happened in the first game. So there's some lost yardage that he created that we'll never see on the stat sheet. But he just doesn't have enough targets. He has not been anything but a go route guy. And it's been disappointing to see that lack of evolution for him. And I don't know if the Patriots aren't asking him to do it because they know that he can't do it, or which is a problem in itself. Or, you know, they're asking him to do it in a limited way because he isn't stepping up to show that he can. I think it's a little bit of both, but that's disappointing. I think everyone anticipated that he would be a more versatile threat than he was in New Orleans. And because that's why he wanted to go to the Patriots. He wanted to do something different than just be a deep threat decoy. And that hasn't happened. So I want to see Philip Dorsett be better, and he already is starting to do so. I want to see that Chris Hogan is not falling apart on the Patriots, and because this group of pass catchers, at least at the wide receiver position, they are dinged up. And every week we go into the season being like, okay, well, go into the game thinking, okay, maybe we're going to see what the complexion of this offense is. And every week someone gets hurt, and things keep changing, and they have to adapt and reacclimate. So I don't think there's going to be a status quo for the Patriots on offense for a few weeks with all these injuries. So it's interesting to see how it continues to evolve.
Yeah, I think Brandon Cooks, bringing him up, is a really good one, because this Texans defense doesn't really have a corner that you can look at that is apt to hanging with him in the secondary. I don't think, you know, Jonathan Joseph is not the player that he was a couple years ago. Kareem Jackson, Kevin Johnson, these guys are not, you know, exceptional players, Pro Bowl type players. This is a game where he could really go off, in my opinion. I think last week Marshawn Lattimore turned out to be ready for the moment and played really well for New Orleans. And they also focused a lot on taking away the deep passes from Cooks, as well as safeties over the top. This game, I really do think that he has an opportunity to pick on some of these Texans corners, and he's really just going to have to step up and do it at this point.
I guess for me, like we said, at the offensive line, it's what they can do against front. And you know, I think you're not gonna much defense plays well. I'm not sure how much that's gonna mean. Texans team, because I just don't feel like where they'd want to be on offense yet. So, even how much we're going to learn about it. I do feel like you said, he's been a little bit underwhelming, and Cooks, you want to see both those guys really step forward, but again, you know, and on defense, other than the secondary conspiracy theory, that's very interesting. Also want to, like we said, see what happens with the linebackers, if they're going to stick to what they did last week, which I thought worked, and if find some sort of consistency on that side of the ball with moving.
Yeah, those corners, you know, Rowe and Gilmore have a chance to be a pretty good tandem. Both guys, super athletic, bigger dudes on the outside that can really get up in the faces of some of these wide receivers, some of these bigger wide receivers that we see around the league. I like those two guys as outside boundary corners a lot, and I thought that Rowe's, you know, kind of ascendance into playing a lot last year would lead to more Malcolm Butler snaps in the slot or inside anyways. And I think we saw a little bit more of that in New Orleans. But, Henry, what do you got coming down the line here for Sunday and stuff?
In terms of?
Writing, anything.
Oh. I was writing about Burkhead's absence. He actually just missed practice. I was looking on Twitter. So that's a factor. The Patriots also signed some wide receiver. He has yet to be identified. I will have five reasons why the Patriots are going to win. That's kind of a piece I write every Sunday morning. But other than that, nothing of great interest. I'm working on a feature on Dietrich Wise. Adam, forget you heard that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the one thing I will mention that I forgot to say, and I think it's funny that all three of us forgot to say, is Rob Gronkowski and Dante Hightower both may or may not play. And those are two of the best players in the entire NFL. So I think they will, in a big way, swing, you know, the outcome of this game a few points in one direction. Obviously, the line is set at, I think you said 13 now. So at this point, do those two guys actually swing it into being a win for the Texans? Probably not. But I was talking about how this team is constantly evolving, constantly adapting. And a lot of teams do that because they have to through injuries. But this Patriots team, I feel like has had to do that even more than normal. So it could be pretty exciting to see those two guys back in the offense and defense respectively, and helping the Patriots kind of get a better sense of what their identity is for this season.
Adam, how about you? Adam.
Oh, sorry. I couldn't hear there for a sec. Mike Henry, I'm working on a Dietrich Wise feature for Sunday, and that's basically all I got going until Sunday itself, when I'll be doing a sidebar on the game. And if Jonathan Kraft talks, a quick blog about whatever he has to say. But, yeah, it's pretty simple from here on out.
Cool. Maybe Jonathan Kraft can help us GIF makers and tell the NFL to screw off about these cease and desist orders. Henry, I don't know if you saw that, but Matt Chatham's site got shut down this morning by the NFL for rebroadcasting, game footage and stuff like that. And I'm scared, so I'm going to go hide for a little while. But anyways, I have Devin McCourty film breakdown out today, I think. It just came out this morning. And then we'll get into some more stuff next week. And then Adam and I will have our review pod, as always, early next week as well. And Henry, thank you so much for doing this. And it was a lot of fun. A lot of good Pats talk, and we hope to have you on again soon.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for keeping me around.
Awesome. And Adam and I will be back next week, and we'll have Henry on again soon, I'm sure. And thank you for listening to the Naked Bootleg Podcast.